Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket, and what an incredible week of sport it's been with the England quarter-final, that amazing roar that went up when England scored that first goal, and the semi-final, and obviously as well, we shouldn't forget that dramatic final game in the T20 England against India in Bristol. Actually, that was a fantastic game.
Yeah, well, you talk about the roar from the England football supporters, but the roar from the Indian cricket supporters. Here's the thing. I just sense that the three series between England and India this summer, T20, One Day International and Test Series, and I wonder whether for India and India supporters, the most important one, perhaps for the supporters, was the T20 series. For the England supporters, that was the least important, and the most important is going to be the Test Series coming up, and that's going to be the least important for the Indian series. And then we've got this One Day series or somewhere in between. I cannot wait for this One Day series between India and England. I think it's going to be the highlight of the summer in a strange way. Three matches, sort of do or die. In a way, it's slightly replicating the World Cup because, you know, there isn't much room for error if you're going to win the series. One bad performance, you're going to be really struggling in the series. And you've got the two best teams in the world going at it with their fantastic array of batsmen. The weather's set fair. What more could you want?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And actually, it may sound odd in this week of sort of English patriotism to be focusing on India, but that's what we're going to do today, actually, and we're going to ask how good this Indian team can be, and can they dominate world cricket for the foreseeable future? They are, of course, number one test team in the world, and second in the ODI and T20 rankings. England, of course, are first in the ODI rankings, so as you say, the billing for this three-match one-day series is brilliant. It starts Thursday, then there's another game Saturday, and another game early next week. And England are going to have to play incredibly well to win this series. And I think it will be a benchmark for how far they've come, actually. What their chances genuinely are for winning the World Cup next year.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, obviously, who wins this series isn't going to dictate who's going to win the World Cup next year. But it really does feel as if this is this England one-day side tested. Just remember, they did lose to Scotland earlier in the summer. They did. They lost to Scotland. And, yeah, you know, that is a real question mark against them, I think, and a question mark specifically against their bowling. And I think we saw that a bit in the T20 series. I think their bowling is going to be under real pressure in this one-day series. How is it going to stand up? And, you know, will they need to make some changes next summer?
They've already shown that India that they don't rate Moeen Ali's bowling too much. England have had to rejig their T20 team because they pretty much dismissed his bowling from their presence, and he got dropped, and I wonder how much of a role he's going to play in the one-day series. But just looking at India, and we're going to talk, by the way, in a bit to the owner of the Rajasthan Royals, one of the IPL teams, Manoj Badali, a good friend of mine who lives in England, is based in England, but has had a huge influence on the IPL and the development of the Royals as well. But before we do that, we should just look at some stats, really, that the incredible performances of India over the last couple of years. I mean, I've written down here in Test cricket, played 27, won 18, lost just three games. Mm. And they were always reputed as a team who were pretty good at home, but not so good away. But in the last 2 years, away from home, played 10, won 6, lost 2. And that performance, that record, is replicated in ODIs too, where, for instance, playing away from home in the last 2 years, played 21, won 16, lost 4. So in the combination of tests and one day, as they've lost just 6 games out of 31 played away from home.
Yeah, and look at their one-day record recently. They've won their last 9 series. Of course, they had that failure in the Champions Trophy. Well, failure. They got to the final. That was pretty good, but they got thrashed by Pakistan in the final, absolutely crushed in the final. They've come back since then. They've won 6 series in a row. They won 5-1 in South Africa. I mean, that's not a bad effort to do that. So clearly they are a team on the up in all forms of the game. And you do wonder, are they going to be like the West Indies team of the 1980s and the Australian team of the 90s into the 2000s, i.e. so dominant in the whole game of cricket, all around the world, home and away, and just the outstanding team, the benchmark team in world cricket?
Well, we're going to answer that question in a little bit. I've certainly got a view on that. First, we should just talk about how they've developed into this incredible strength, this powerhouse in the game. And it's a powerhouse, I suppose, dominated by explosive batsmen, very fit batsmen, very dynamic batsmen, led, of course, by the irrepressible Virat Kohli. But their bowlers, too, have come through. There's more pace bowlers available now with different actions and genuine pace, whereas you'd think of India from the 1980s and 90s, very few bowlers managed to bowl 85 miles an hour. There was Javagal Srinath, for instance, who managed to get the ball through, but few others until really the last decade have got the ball through at 90 miles an hour, and now they've got plenty in that category to choose from. And they're starting to produce different spinners because, again, India, apart from Chandrasekhar in the 1970s, they haven't really ever produced a dynamic leg spinner, for instance. They've had off spinners and they've had left armers, but they haven't had anybody who had, googlies and top spinners and all sorts. Apart from a little bit, you could say, Anil Kumble. I know he took 500 test wickets, but he wasn't in a way a mystery spinner. Yeah. He was just a very accurate sort of leg roller bowler. But now they've got bowlers like Kuldeep Yadav, for instance, who is a wrist spinner, left arm over the wicket. He's a little bit of a Machiavellian sort of character who walks up to the wicket and then stops, and batsmen have sort of got to get ready again. And there's one or two little tricks he's got up his sleeve there. And India are starting to create, leg spinners like Chahal as well. So they have got a real range of good bowlers.
Yeah, and that, I mean, you think ahead, that's going to be a problem for England's batsmen because they've never been particularly good against wrist spin. I mean, there are other factors as well in the development of Indian cricket, and we'll talk about the IPL in just a moment, but things like facilities, the facilities that are developing around India, and the fact that I think the Indian selectors now are looking beyond the main centres of India. Rahul Dravid made the point over the weekend that the last World Cup, the under-19 World Cup, they only had one player from Mumbai, one from Delhi, one from Kolkata, none from Chennai, none from Bangalore, traditional centres of Indian cricket. So they really are beginning to harness the whole nation, or as much of the nation as they possibly can. And that's quite frightening, actually, when you think of the number of people and the fanaticism and the excitement about cricket in India.
Well, I talked about this to my good friend Manoj Badali, who is brought up in England, went to Haberdasher's School and then to Cambridge University, and was a decent cricketer, club cricketer. And actually, in the early 2000s, he became involved with Leicestershire because he wanted to try and help that county develop and get a more sort of South Asian connection to their cricket. And sort of from that led into his interest in Indian cricket and finally helping to buy one of the IPL franchises, the Rajasthan Royals. And one of the things I asked him first was, how much of an impact has the IPL had on the development of this fantastic Indian team?
I mean, clearly I'm not objective, but I would say that the IPL's had a massive impact. And I think at lots of different levels. Clearly, in terms of giving young Indian players the opportunity to play against the very best of the world, I think that's probably been the most significant benefit that the Indian team has got. But it's not just about playing with them. It's about the number of players who are with some of the best cricketers in the world, learning from them in practice and training for a really intensive 7-week period. So when you look at the current cadre of Indian players, some of them are relatively new names here. Players like Rahul, even to some extent, Bumrah, Bhuvneshwar Kumar. These are players who've grown up over the last 10 or 11 years, playing with the likes of AB de Villiers, playing with the likes of Steve Smith, David Warner, playing with some of the absolute best cricketers of their generation. And the knock-on influence of that has to be huge. I think the other aspect is that there are other aspects such as fielding. I mean, even if I think back to the early years of the IPL, you'd often have discussions about hiding certain Indian players in the field, whereas now you look at the current Indian side, and they're as good a fielding side as any in world cricket. Some of that's been driven more recently by Virat Kohli's focus on fitness and the BCCI's requirement now for players to have pretty rigorous fitness tests before they get out there. But a huge part of that is the pressures that they're put under to perform as fielders in the IPL. I think at a more subtle level, the other impact is just that young Indians are growing up much more. Young Indian cricketers are just having to grow up a lot more quickly. They're earning more than they've ever earned. I mean, if you look at... I was chatting to Rahul Dravid last Saturday, and he was talking about the fact that 9 of his 11 India A team are all millionaires already. I mean, that would have been unheard of 5 or 10 years ago. You look at the India under 19, and there's probably 5 millionaires in that team.
God.
So,
yeah.
And with those sort of early riches come earlier exposure to international travel, earlier exposure to the pressures of looking after your own financials, earlier exposure to just being a bit more worldly wise. And I think you, as a former top level cricketer, would understand that a big part of that cricketing journey is the growing up. So I think, look, at lots of different levels, skills,
facilities, I'd say as well. Actually, Ravi Shastri made this point before, that all the grounds now are excellent outfields, and there's great nets, and you know, there's all the backroom staff and so on, which allows that massive raft of Indian cricketers, of which there are probably more than any other country, to mature and develop and more sophisticatedly.
Yeah, it's a great point. Actually, the facilities I hadn't thought about, but you're right. But actually, your point about the backroom staff is just as important, which is IPL franchises has such extensive backroom staff that include fitness and conditioning. You know, quite a few of the franchises have year-round nutritional advisors.
No room for you in the dressing room, the owner, is there?
So, you know, the psychologist, and, you know, you should ask, you know, Rahul or even a Sachin, but would they have been exposed to that age 19, 20, 21?
Well, actually, I remember Greg Chappell being the Indian coach, and a lot of the star Indian players rejecting some of the sort of fitness and some of the discipline stuff that he tried to bring in.
Sure.
And there was a big fallout between him and Sourav Ganguly, wasn't there? Because of the kind of... he was trying to bring some science in and they were rejecting it.
Absolutely. So you're right. I mean, the facilities and the backroom staff must have an impact as well. But I suppose connected to that, it's also just the exposure that these young kids are given, whether it's by the media. They become household names now. After 3 or 4 stunning performances in the IPL. Start of last year's IPL, very few people would have known KL Rahul. Today, he wanders around India as a superstar. Having to deal with that, having to manage that, that's all the stuff that sometimes, when I think sportsmen go from, you know, the top end of county cricket to test cricket, you know, some of that off-field stuff that they have to manage sometimes has a negative impact for some of them, whereas these young Indians are getting to learn that really early in their career.
How good could this Indian team be? I mean, they're number one test match team in the world, and they're second in ODIs and T20s. Do you think they could be as dominant as the Australians of the 90s and the West Indies of the 80s?
That's a question. I mean, as Arthur's put in one of his articles recently, I mean, there is a simple numbers argument, right? I mean, in India, partly because of the IPL, partly because of the newfound wealth in the game, but also partly because of the population of, you know, 1.2 billion cricket-mad individuals, are churning out the numbers of players, again, back to IPL auctions 10 years ago. You'd be struggling to pick two or three genuine Indian quicks. You'd be struggling to identify one or two Indian top-order batsmen that could play the short ball. Today, you've got 10 or 15, if not 20, in both categories that are definitely IPL-ready, if not international-ready. So there is a numbers issue for the rest of the world. It won't be long before, you know, the India... I mean, when I look at the India A side that's touring the UK at the moment, or recently toured the UK, I mean, you've got players like Rishabh Pant, Prithvi Shaw, who I'd argue would walk into any international 11 today. So there is a numbers issue, and that's going to be a challenge for the rest of the world to deal with, which should mean, to answer your question, that this is a bit of a... This has the potential to be quite a long-lasting dynasty.
Assuming they actually want it to be, sure. I suppose, because in the end, how much does India want to be an international cricket team? How dominant is the IPL, and in a way, how reliant are they on the IPL? Do they really need international cricket, the Indians?
Yeah, look, I think they do. I mean, I think, yes, there's huge excitement and focus on the IPL, but as you saw yesterday, as you've seen on even the early few games that the Indians have played over here in England, the passion for Team India is pretty extreme as well, and cricket is more than just another sport for Indians. It is arguably one of the few sports in which they can be globally dominant and global number one. So the identity that Team India and the confidence that Team India and the standing that Team India gives young Indians on a modern stage, on a modern global stage, is pretty important. And so I think the notion that... And I think young Indians who are coming through, even with the riches of the IPL, their goal is still to play for Team India. I think the challenge, not to preempt your next question, is whether that appetite and passion applies to Team India in the test game is quite... I think that's a bigger question. You know, I think the passion that you saw, the commitment that you saw yesterday in winning that series decider between England and India, I don't know if that's the same passion and excitement that will be exhibited should the test match series in the summer go down to a decider.
So, I mean, in India now, over that T20 decider, presumably there'll be bars and restaurants and, you know, community centres jammed full of people kind of hysterically excited, whereas you're doubting slightly whether that have the same effect on it during the test series.
Yeah, definitely. Last night was a big night across India, probably because of the way we watch our cricket over there, probably more actually in the home. I mean, much like the atmosphere that we all experience on Saturday afternoon watching England play in our front rooms, back rooms, gardens, etc. Yesterday was a big day for, I don't know what the viewer ratings were, but they would have been massive last night. You're right, whether those same ratings, that same attendance, physical attendance, you look at test matches in India, you know, and you ask yourself the question, how many people are turning up to the stadia who've actually paid for a ticket? It's in sharp decline.
Just one more thing, looking ahead a bit, I mean, you've been involved with the IPL now for 10 or 11 years since it started. What's the next step? Can it advance further?
I think the IPL has and can continue to become a format that other countries benefit from. England certainly has the capability to create a tournament of if not the same viewership and eyeballs, pretty significant viewership and eyeballs. Australian cricket's been reinvigorated with the Big Bash. So I think that's one way in which the IPL can benefit the game more broadly. And I think the other way is that India itself has to look at how it uses its power, uses its riches to promote the game globally. So whether that's IPL franchises playing overseas, whether that's Team India playing games in parts of the world where there are huge Indian followerships like North America that drive participation in the game. Because fundamentally, the game can only grow if the overall participation in the game increases. And we see that here in England where, you know, in truth, we've had a game that's sort of stagnated for the last 10 years. And how we engage the South Asian population here is critical to the future of the game. But that's true of other parts of the world as well.
So that's Manoj Badali. Amazing fact, isn't it, that 9 of the India A team are millionaires already. That makes you envious, doesn't it?
Well, it's absolutely stunning, isn't it? I mean, it's an incredible stat. How many of the England A team players earn more than £4.50? But you know, it's a very good point, isn't it, about the riches that are Indian cricket.
And the responsibilities that that brings with it as well, and the pressure that you have to deal with almost every day as a young Indian player. Anyway, we'll have a look at how good we think this Indian team can be in the future after the break. Welcome back. And actually, I spent yesterday evening with an entourage from the Rajasthan Royals, Manoj Badali's Rajasthan Royals, who were over from India to do a sort of information gathering trip. And one of the things they did, for instance, they went to the Chelsea Football Academy and they picked up all sorts of little nuggets about how they run their business. One of the things that has amazed me about that is that the Chelsea Academy starts at age 9 to 16 or 17. Mm. And not only do they teach the kids how to eat properly and how to have a really good, balanced, nutritious diet in the interest of playing football, but also they teach the parents how to cook for their kids as well. And they have tests for the kids and their parents about nutrition. And if they fail, they're ejected. So, you know, the levels that these football clubs are going to now to make sure that their players are in the right state physically and mentally to play the game is incredible. And today, the Rajasthan Royals entourage are off to Liverpool to get another sense of how another major team runs their operations on a physical, mental, technical and even digital level to try and get ideas about publicising the game and marketing the game better. So, you know, there is almost no stone unturned with these IPL teams in how they want to try and improve and develop their players and the game in general, which just goes to show how much input Indian cricket is placing in its development of its players.
How much do you think, you asked him the question, I mean, this point about the IPL is all-consuming within India, and this feeling that, in a way, that it's the thing that matters compared, possibly, to the Indian team. Certainly the Indian Test match team, anyway, in terms of how it's followed and the passion for it. And do you see a future? It's not quite happened in football, but in football, club football, if you ask people what their first loyalty is to, they would probably say their club rather than their country these days. Certainly, I think in England, the club is more important than country. Is that something that you think could happen in India? Manoj rather sort of knocked it back there, didn't he? I think in white ball cricket anyway. But do you think there's something could happen that the IPL takes over from the focus on the Indian team?
Well, no, because, of course, they change the teams every 3 years.
The IPL teams?
It's built on an American model of drafts and auctions and throwing all the players into the pot and reselecting them again for different teams. So, in a way, I think there's less loyalty to an IPL team than probably even an English county. Probably it's a bit like Premiership football, isn't it? That, again, you know, players move around.
But there's
quite
still
a lot.
But there's that loyalty you develop. I mean, if you're in India, I'm thinking if you live in Mumbai, you just get used to the fact that there's a conveyor belt of players. You still support your team in the way that if you support Liverpool, there's a conveyor belt of players going in and out of that club as well. But you still support your club or Arsenal or Manchester United. So it's hard to know. I mean, there's a huge focus on the Indian team at the moment. I don't know whether it's something that you see. We really notice it here because of the support they get. They're absolutely fanatical. Four gets struck, people are dancing as if they actually won the game. Not this mere four being struck. There's that huge passion. I wonder whether it's something that passion is overseas rather than necessarily in India. I wonder whether it might well change in India itself.
The question is, how good is this Indian team going to be, and can they dominate the world game for a decade, as the Australians with Warne and McGrath and so on did in the 90s, and obviously the West Indies in the 80s? And my simple answer to that, actually, is I don't think they will in Test cricket, because, firstly, I think other nations are spending quite a lot of money, England, Australia, in development and science, and so I think that the general level of teams is quite balanced. There's no one standout team, even though India are at the top of the moment. And the other thing is,
well, we're about to find out as well, aren't we, over the next couple of years with the World Test Championship.
Key thing for me is that they don't have any really outstanding bowlers.
Yeah.
And if you look at the West Indies from the 1980s, they were dominated by those four or five incredibly accurate as well as fast and venomous bowlers. And with Australia, they had McGrath and Warne, who, if they couldn't take wickets, dried up runs and just imposed this sort of hypnosis on teams. And they were the bankers that guaranteed the number of victories that they achieved. India don't have anybody in that category who can control a game and constantly take huge bags of wickets. So I don't think they're going to be as dominant as those teams were.
Do you think that's more relevant for overseas test matches rather than home test matches? I'm just thinking at home test matches, you actually get worn down by weight of runs. It happened to England in their last tour of India, where I think three occasions England scored over 400. But I think the match in Chennai, England made 479, which is a pretty handy first inning score. India reply with 700.
Yeah.
So you get worn down by the weight of runs. You also know the weather's going to be fine over 5 days, so you're going to get generally speaking, full test matches. So your point is probably right for overseas test matches. That's where you need the bowlers to win you the games, to keep you in the games. And you're right. I mean, when you think of those great West Indian sides, those great Australian sides, they had fantastic batsmen. But it's Viv Richards, obviously, but it's the bowlers you think of, isn't it? When you whisper about the teams, you think, oh yeah, there was Marshall and there was Holding. There's a reverence there when you speak their names, and it's the same with Warne and McGrath. Exactly the same.
Certainly, I think India's batsmen are going to help them probably dominate one-day cricket in the next 5 to 10 years. But if you look at sport generally, world sport, and I mean this Football World Cup has really illustrated this, there is less to choose between the teams now, partly, I think, because so many more teams are using a lot of sophisticated measures to improve their players technically, physically and mentally. And players are playing all around the world in different tournaments, you know, getting English players playing in Spain and Spanish players playing in England and Brazilian players playing wherever. So, you know, there's more shared experience and shared knowledge and shared skills and shared expertise, which I think is levelling up all the nations.
Mm.
And that, I think, will happen in cricket as well.
I definitely agree with you about Indian white ball domination. I suppose the challenge for them is to come away from home and win a World Cup. They did it in England in 1983, a long, long time ago.
Completely out of the blue, actually, in that case.
And in a way, it changed the game of cricket, didn't it? You think about Kerry Packer and his, what was seen as a circus at the time, Kerry Packer's World Series, as being a game changer in terms of international cricket. Well, India winning the World Cup did exactly that, and also winning the World T20 did exactly that as well when they won it in South Africa. So, but perhaps the challenge for them is to win a World Cup overseas, and they clearly have got a fantastic opportunity next summer. In a way, they probably wish they could take the weather of this summer into next summer. I just wonder whether these are the sort of conditions that England want to take on India in. Certainly not in Test cricket, but you know, really dry conditions. I'm not sure that's what England want. They want nice, and so do India. I was saying England want nice flat pitches, but then the India batsmen do as well. And they just feel as if they've got one or two more bases covered than England. They're not a perfect side. They're not the greatest one-day side India they've ever played the game. Nothing like that. But they just seem to have a few more bases covered, and They're really canny. I think that's why I think this one-day series is going to be so fascinating. There's not going to be any weather issues or anything like that. It's going to be 50-over shootouts and
big scores. Yeah. And, in fact, one of the things that I talked to Manoj Badali a little bit about sort of after our interview was, firstly, how important is the toss now in these one-day formats? Because it's become very important. You win the toss, you put the other team in, you bat second, you can chase practically anything. And the records are that teams batting second winning more and more games, especially in T20. Yeah. And actually, the other thing that he was saying is that the IPL are looking to expand and play matches abroad, play matches in the United States, perhaps play matches in England as well, to try and get these IPL franchise brands even more notoriety and more support, get more South Asians from these other countries interested, which he talked about a little bit at the end of that interview. And he is helping actually the ECB with their South Asian campaign to get more South Asians from England interested in cricket and involved and engaged in the game, which hopefully will help England's cause ultimately.
I think that was my point about the expansion of the T20 game superseding international cricket and perhaps ultimately Team India. The IPL product in India might eventually be stronger than the Team India product, if you see what I mean. But that's a long way off.
Okay, well, lots of interesting talking points there anyway as we embark on this three-match one-day series. Who do we think is going to win? Trent Bridge is a bit of a stronghold for England, first game. If they bat second, so i.e. win the toss, great chance of winning that one, I reckon.
Mm. Mind you, they've had some big scores there, batting first, haven't they? Almost submerging the opposition. Just get a huge score, just make it impossible, as they did for Australia, as they did for Pakistan. My hunch is that India will just be a bit too good for England. I just wonder whether they've got... Their bowlers are slightly cannier.
Mm. Kuldeep Yadav is clever bowler.
Yeah, and they've got the spinners as well. Mm-hmm. I think England are going to have to go really big, if they bat first, and just build that scoreboard pressure so it's just too great for India. This is a really talented India one-day side, a very talented England side. I just wonder whether India's bowling is just a little bit better, just a bit cannier.
I wonder if they'll open the bowling with a spinner. Because that's what I would do every time to Jason Roy. And no team really seems to do it. They did recently, didn't they? The Indians in one of the T20 games, they bowled a spinner early on and Roy got out. So that's got to be a strategy.
I mean, the one thing I would say, of course, is, and I think it's pretty obvious, is that 50-over cricket is England's strongest suit of the three. They're not bad at T20. I think they're a really ordinary test match team at the moment. One-day cricket is their strongest suit. The last time these two teams played against each other, England in India, England were far closer to India than they've ever been before in India. They got much closer to them. They actually won a game in Calcutta. We were there. In Cuttack, they lost a game that they threatened to win. They were beaten by a handful of runs in the end, 15 runs, whatever it was, after a brilliant partnership between Dhoni and Yuvraj. So I think there's that confidence there. There's that belief there that England can win this one-day series, but it just promises to be absolutely fantastic cricket, and the noise, the atmosphere as well. It really, for me, is really going to be the highlight of the summer.
What a weekend it's going to be if England play their second one-day international against India at Lords on Saturday, and then we have the World Cup on Sunday. Not much work going to be done on Monday morning, I don't think, but we will be working. We will work on Tuesday at the end of this memorable World Cup and one-day series and review it and look ahead to the Test series. In the meantime, thanks for listening.
Podcast Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.